Hello everyone, welcome to the second episode of Double Faults, a tennis podcast with me, Indivay Kang.
And you got me, Matt Bailey.
How do you, Matthew?
Not too bad. Lots happened since the last podcast we did.
Yeah, we spoke in December last year. Since then we've had the first Grand Slam of the year. What's your take on the first Grand Slam, Matt?
Well,
did it go to plan? What you predicted?
Well, you got the man, Mr. Roger Federer, winning yet another slam.
Number 20.
Holding off, I think at the end of that last podcast, we were talking about all the young guns coming through, changing the guard, and yet again, Roger Federer holds them off and wins another slam. It's pretty incredible. If I didn't respect Federer enough before, the respect I've got for him just grows every single time. It's incredible. When his 20th slam.
It's record-breaking for a couple of reasons. The 20th, which is just a mind-boggling number, 20 Grand Slams. Before Federer was around, we were talking about 14 with Sampras. That seemed like an unachievable number, 14. And Federer's put another six on that. And six Australian Open titles as well. So he's the record holder for Australian Open titles. What an achievement, 20 and six.
Do you think 20 can be beaten? Do you think Rafa can surpass the 20 mark as well?
Oh, that's a good question. Can Rafa get to 20? Can Rafa play another four French Opens, I think, is equivalent a question. He's been dominating that Grand Slam. His fitness let him down at the Australian, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a disappointing way to see him exit that tournament. Fair enough to Cilic, hitting the ball very big, taking Rafa to a fifth set, but Rafa again... The guy couldn't walk again, could he? Similar to what I said last time, about him hobbling like a granddad, the curse he's aging too soon.
No, he is, but I thought he did something pretty clever, actually, this tournament.
Get out the wheelchair?
close, but he whipped out the old sleeveless shirt, didn't he?
Sleeveless, he did. I thought the three-quarter pants, the three-quarter
the
trousers were
going to
come out as well. Slowly working his way. I think he's trying to reverse age, time.
He's had the hair transplant. He's got the sleeveless shirt.
I don't think that hair transplant has quite worked. He might need a second installment of whatever has been implanted in there.
I've actually got a theory, Matt. Rafa's source of power is his pirate pants, the three-quarter lengths. Has he won Wimbledon since saying goodbye to the three-quarters?
Can someone tell Rafa this before it's too late?
Rafa, if you're out there, we've got a message for you especially. Get back the three-quarter pants. But in all seriousness, Rafa got knocked out in the quarterfinals. Was quarters, semis?
He got knocked out in the quarterfinals.
And
Cilic,
right,
Cilic took Edmund out in the semifinals.
We've got a lot to talk about there with Edmund making it through to semifinals. Maiden Grand Slam semi-final, having previously never made it past the fourth round.
Yeah, fourth round before that.
And this time he makes it to the semi-finals. And who did he take out along the way? Grigor?
Yeah, Grigor. Well, Grigor.
How do you solve a problem like Grigor? Maria couldn't do it.
Nicole Scherzinger is trying to.
She's doing her best. He's got plenty of support in that department. But it's another Grand Slam where Grigor is just flattered to deceive. Hasn't he? He's got to the quarters, looking good. Took out Kyrgios.
Very good match against Kyrgios. Kyrgios was hitting the ball well. Dimitrov, everyone talks about Kyrgios' ball striking, natural ability, talent. Grigor was out hitting him, out ball striking him. Playing some incredible tennis, and then just for him to lose next round, pretty simply.
It's tame, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's tame.
Tame performance against Edmund, and many question marks there. Does he not have a plan B? Like, what's holding him back? What's stopping him winning the slam? With Rafa slightly injured at the moment. Grigor was world number three. Great opportunity to maybe take his first slam, and yet again he's fallen short.
I completely agree with that. And I think an interesting comparison to make is him and Marin Cilic.
Yeah.
So would I say that Grigor Dimitrov is any less talented than Cilic? I don't think many people could say that. But on the other hand, Cilic has made three Grand Slam finals. He's got a Grand Slam. Grigor can't say those two things. So what's the difference there? I mean, it's fair to say that Grigor's not any less talented than Cilic. That's the first point to start. That's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, if we just take the Cilic-Edmund match, I think kind of sums up a lot. Sums up why maybe Dimitrov hasn't done more than he has. I was watching that match, and for someone who ball strikes as well as Dimitrov, he just seemed to lose complete confidence in his ability. I think it does stem down to a confidence issue.
Yeah.
He started pushing the ball. He was making random errors off balls. He wasn't even trying to attack. He was trying to rally back. He was just missing them. He kept slicing every single backhand. Now, he's got a good slice, but I think, as you pointed out, as we were speaking about, you know, prior to this, the guy was floating those slices a lot more than, you know, than his usual effective low slice. And I don't know, it's hard to explain what's causing that.
No, I agree with you there, Matt. I think what I noticed with Dimitrov, more than any other player who's at that part of the rankings, is that the pressure really, really sits on him. He's expected to win a Grand Slam. He's expected to play like Roger Federer. I mean, he's lived with that his whole life. He's been called Baby Fed. But when he plays the top players, it's almost like he knows that he's not maybe expected to beat Roger Federer. He's not expected to beat Rafa Nadal. And the best Dimitrov comes out. And that's when we watch him and we think, oh, that's a guy who can win a Grand Slam. He can take players like Roger and Rafa. But then when he plays against Kyle Edmund or Dan Evans, he's struggling, and I think that's the pressure.
Or Ronald McDonald.
Or Ronald McDonald, yeah. But I think his problem is pressure. Now, someone who I think's done well under pressure, one of our own, Kedders, Kyle Edmund.
Yeah, you know, to get to the semi-finals of that slam. Now, I watched Edmund play at the end of last year in Vienna.
Mm.
And
this was live, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was live. And I think I mentioned this last time also on the podcast that I was disappointed with his serve at the time. And one big difference I noticed from when I watched him towards the back end of last season and when he was serving in the Australian Open, you look at the number of aces on returnables that he was hitting in the Australian, you know, far superior to what was going on at the end of last year.
Yeah.
And
What's he changed technically there?
Now, when I was watching him at the back end of last year, a few things I noticed with his serve. That, number one, the ball toss was very low, far too low. That's a huge thing. Like, the higher you throw up the, okay, within reason, the higher you throw up the ball, the more you can use your legs, and legs create a lot of power from the serve. So it's very important to get that leg drive. By slightly hiring the ball toss, it gives him a lot more options. It also enables him to hit down on the ball a little bit more, so it's a bit more effective when it lands on the other side of the court. The way.
So there's quite a few things that have changed with his serve, and
yeah.
it's all stemming from ball toss.
Yeah.
And getting up. So okay.
But ball toss is a key thing there. Obviously, you probably argue that accuracy as well is also also improved. When he's starting to hit aces, a lot of times it's not so much. Okay, obviously speed, power. Power does make a considerable difference, but if you start hitting lines, hitting spots, varying it up.
If there's one thing that Grigor Dimitrov has taught me, actually, it's being good technically is one thing, and clearly Kyle's improved his technique, but having that tenacity, that fighting spirit to get yourself through those really tough, grueling five setters in 40 degree heat, that's what Edmund's proved this Grand Slam, I think. Can you see him winning a Grand Slam?
I was just about to ask you the same question. At the moment, no. Do I think he'll never win a Grand Slam? I certainly wouldn't be saying that, because...
What's his best surface? What's his best chance to win a Grand Slam?
Okay, I know Edmund thinks that clay is his best surface, just like Murray used to think that clay was his best surface. It seems to be a theme with all the British guys. I think clay is the best surface.
I don't think Dan Evans thinks clay is his best surface.
No, but he did win one match before he struck back.
That's true.
He found the secret. But... I think realistically a hard court. I think a hard court is his best opportunity.
Yeah.
On a clay court, you've got guys like Nadal, which I know Edmund took a set last year off Rafa, but I don't see him. I think there'll always be a clay court or someone who moves better than him. That's a big weakness with Edmund, is his movement. I think on a clay court, that's going to get exposed. He got exposed even in this tournament, even when he plays on a hard court, you can see just his movement pattern, especially out wide in certain situations.
He doesn't defend very convincingly out wide, does
he? No, he doesn't. And again, that does stem down to movement. So I think if he does want to make that transition from Grand Slam semi-finalist to Grand Slam champion, I think movement's the key area that he needs to work on. He's got the shots. He's got an unbelievable forehand, a very solid backhand, improved his serve.
I agree with all that. And I think Edwin's lucky in one respect, because when you can attack as aggressively as him, then your movement can be disguised a little bit, well, to some extent.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if Federer's benefited from that, because the earlier and earlier he takes the ball, the less he has to worry about being 30 foot behind the baseline or out wide, and you don't even need to question his movement. I think he is moving very well. But how often do we see him out wide dealing with tough balls? He doesn't have to.
He's always the one that's getting everyone else in the corners.
He's imbalanced. The others aren't.
Yeah, you'll find very, very rarely that that Federer will be out of position, you know, off the court, scrambling. And I'm not saying he can't do that. He can. I've seen it where he's played either big hitters or Rafa's angling him, you know, one way. And I'm not saying he can't do that, because the guy is an absolute legend. He can also get himself out of trouble defensively, but he doesn't put himself in that situation very often.
Yeah.
And that also conserves a lot of energy.
I agree. Matt, actually, before we started this podcast, you had a bit of a controversial take on Federer's Aussie Open. So you didn't actually think he played that well. I agree with you, but you had some really good points to make on that.
Okay, so the point I was mentioning was against Cilic
in the final.
Mm. Cilic had got him beat. He'd won that fourth set. Cilic was hitting big. Federer was looking really ruffled. He was a troubled guy going into that fifth set. He was asking, you know, when's the next change of balls. He was struggling. He was missing. All of a sudden, the fragility in the backhand started reappearing.
Yeah.
You know, he was making random errors off that backhand wing.
We thought we'd seen the back of all that last year.
Yeah, last year he was hitting the backhand so cleanly, so confidently, and that seemed to disappear in that final. And not only that, his forehand, he was being a little bit more defensive than normal, not going for quite as much. Okay, some may argue, okay, that wasn't him being any less confident. Maybe that's because he was using his experience and he knew Cilic would crumble. Because if you're ever going to see a guy crumbling, you know, Cilic, that's the definition of a crumble in that final set. And there's a lot of people who'd probably disagree with me and say, oh, look what Federer's produced here. Produced an incredible fifth set, won it 6-1. But how easy was that?
I think that's probably one of the limpest final set performances in a Grand Slam I've seen, well, in memory.
Absolutely. And again, I think that boils down to confidence and belief. And Cilic's belief that he was going to beat Federer in that fifth set was very low. And the reason, you know, that's highlighted after the match, Cilic was talking about the end of the fourth set, saying how phenomenal he was playing. You know, oh, I was hitting the ball phenomenal, I was playing so well. As soon as you start saying that, you almost don't expect to be able to keep that up. No. And he was playing well, yeah, but Federer's level certainly dipped, so he just didn't have the belief that he could sustain that, or that he's, you know, in the same level as Roger Federer. And how are you going to come to fifth set, Australian Open final, when you don't have that belief?
Yeah. For me, this Grand Slam asked a lot more questions than it answered. It looks from the outside off, oh, we've got a new generation of people coming through. You've got Chung, he's got semis, Edmund gets the semis. Is this the changing of the guards? You know, Rafa finished early. We've got Chung reaching the semi-finals. But we've been here before, haven't we? We've thought that we've got a new generation coming through, and it's never really materialised. So the question is this really the changing of the guards, or are we just going to see 2017 Mark II?
I think that, yeah, there will be more slams won from Federer or Nadal, I should say.
What about Murray and Djokovic? Because they didn't really make it this tournament, did they? Murray wasn't there at all.
Yeah, I was expecting big things of Djokovic this year. I'm still expecting big things from him.
Okay.
I'm a little bit... I don't like his serve at all. And not just because he's changed his technique, made it a lot more compact, a lot shorter swing to, you know, to put less pressure on the elbow. But he doesn't use his legs at all. If you're going to have a short, compact technique, you need to use leg drive. That makes up for a lot of the power. He's not doing that. So he needs to reassess that service action.
So you think technically he's not...
Technically on that serve, I don't like it.
Okay.
He simplified it, so not so much technically with the arm, because I understand why he's done that, to reduce the impact on the elbow, but he's not using his legs.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Roddick, who had a really compact serve, or Monfils, okay, they've got unbelievable racket head speed, you know, arm speed coming through that, but also explosive power. You need to be, you need some explosive leg drive from that. Djokovic, he's hardly using his legs. You watch a serve back, he's not really getting.
So that's something he needs to fix, isn't it?
That's something he needs to fix, and it's obviously a concern that Chung's almost out Djokovic. That's a concern. Yeah, the Chung
and what do you,
moving
what do you mean, out Djokovic. That's quite a statement. What do you mean by that? He's outmaneuvered him. He's sliding better than him. Defending better than him.
Exactly.
All those things. Exactly
that. And Djokovic, the guy who doesn't miss a ball. I've seen him against Rafa, and Rafa just can't get through him. Djokovic doesn't miss, and then hits a winner at the end of the rally. He looked impatient. He couldn't find a way through against Chung.
Yeah.
So, I think it's too early to say that's the end of Djokovic. It was his first tournament back. I'm still expecting big things from him. Fresh Djokovic with a lot of match experience, 4 months down the line, I think he'll be reversing that scoreline against Chung.
Okay. And last but not least of the famous quartet, Mr. Murray.
Mr. Murray, yeah. Obviously, positive things post his operation. He's saying, you know, he wants to be back on the court pretty soon. He thinks that even if he's at, what was the percentage? 90, if he said 95% of his best, he still thinks he could be challenging for slams or something like that.
Do you agree with that?
I like his optimism, but I think we've got to be realistic. He hasn't been fit for a long time. He obviously hasn't played a proper, apart from exhibition matches since Wimby, quarter final. I think there's a lot of question marks over the Murray game.
A lot of questions for Andy in particular, isn't it? I mean, we've got him again in the studio.
I think Andy likes us.
Well,
you
know, he's here.
Got a lot of contacts, and Andy clearly one of your best friends. So,
Andy, what's your take on this? Do you want to get involved?
Thank you very much for having me on the show again. It's very interesting what you say about my injury, but I can assure you that I'm going to come back and get to 24 Grand Slams in the next 10 years.
Andy, do you still think that your best surface is clay?
I think that's very hard to disagree with.
Yeah, makes sense, Andy. makes total sense.
Thanks again, Andy. Great to have you on the show. And I think that's it for this month, Matt. But we've got a third episode coming out in March. Thanks to everyone who's listened so far.
Stay in touch for Miami, Indian Wells predictions, building up into the European clay court season. We've got a lot of exciting stuff this year, and we want to obviously share it with everyone. So stay in touch for episode number 3 of Double Faults Tennis Podcast.
And until then, adios.